Stories, fables, ghostly tales.
Welcome, listeners. You know what time it is. Sherlock Holmes and Watson's new adventure OTRs. Today is actually a really great episode because I've figured out, finally, how to legitimately repair warbled audio. Technical term, of course, for seriously messed up bits of audio that wobble and blip. These aren't normal clicks or pops, oh no. They are tape tears, complete skips, and excessive mic feedback hitting the audio reel. You'll hear some of this in the episode, but they come out like little bumps in the road, and are severely and heavily healed, as it were, to a point where your ears are intact, but also, the audio is returned to its former glory. In some cases, it's completely healed. For some reason, I find that actresses in these OTRs suffer the brunt of that feedback due to their voices peaking and spiking the audio. No fault of their own, just the way the tape captures their audio at that frequency. That aside, new techniques that I've applied today allow me to repair this audio to roughly 80% of its former glory. Those new techniques opened doors for me to remaster the audio that was previously locked away as undoable. Which means even more episodes are up for grabs now in the Sherlock Holmes and, hell, any OTRs out there. Of course, some will remain unrepairable, but there are a lot now that I can tap into and bring back to life, as it were. Resurrect! So listeners, turn up the sound and enjoy this remastered and repaired old-time radio episode. Enjoy.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that brilliant detective, Sherlock Holmes. And say, while you lend an ear to the good doctor, you'll pull out a pleasure out of a glass of rich, ruby-red Petri California Port. Just sit back and sip that Petri Port leisurely. There's a wine that's just perfect after dinner. A wine that really goes with storytelling and conversation. Petri Port is as rich in flavor as it is in color. And what a flavor. Full, hearty, and delicious. I can't think of a better way to express your hospitality than to offer your friends a glass of good Petri Port. Serve that Petri Port alone, or serve it with fruit, or nuts, or with cake, or sandwiches. No matter how you serve it, you can serve that Petri Port proudly. Because the name Petri is the proudest name in the history of American wine. Well, here we are once again, keeping our weekly date with Dr. Watson. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. Come in and join me. As you see, the puppies have been keeping your chair warm for you. Here, shove them off.
No, Doctor, I don't want to disturb them. They look much too comfortable. I'll sit over here, thanks.
There's tobacco in the jar beside you, cigarettes in the box, and some excellent port on the sideboard, so make yourself at home.
Thanks, Doctor. Are you all ready with tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure?
Yes, Mr. Bartell, though I'm afraid after all these years, it's going to be a little hard for me to recapture for you the spirit of the story.
Last week you told us that a band of gypsies played a prominent part in the adventure.
Yes, they did indeed. And it was amid that colorful atmosphere that my story begins. It was in the autumn of 1890. My old friend Sherlock Holmes had persuaded me to leave the comforts of my domestic fireside for a few days and to accompany him to the tiny village of Bragston-on-the-Marsh in the heart of the Norfolk Fen district.
What took Sherlock Holmes up there, Doctor?
I'm afraid that at the time we left London, Mr. Bartell, he concealed his true purpose from me, saying only that he wanted friendly companionship and a strong right arm. Not until later did I learn that he was then on the track of one of the last clues that led to the confining of the Moriarty gang. But to get on with my story. We arrived at Bragston-on-the-Marsh and settled ourselves in the village inn. And after an early dinner, we strolled across the fields to the gypsy fair that was in camp nearby. It was a colorful sight, Mr. Bartell. Naphtha flares lighted a group of tents and caravans dotted round the edge of the marsh. And just gold-earring gypsy girls told fortunes and danced. Swarthy gypsy men played on their violins the haunting melodies of their ancestors. We watched the sideshows for a few moments and then strolled towards the center of the gypsy encampment. It seems only like yesterday, Mr. Bartell, as Holmes turned to me and said...
Far cry from Baker Street, isn't it, Watson?
Yes, indeed. Just the same, Holmes, I'm convinced that you're not here purely for holiday. You're on the trail of some criminal.
No, old chap, I'm on the trail of a clue. A clue, if I find it, may lead to the confounding of the Moriarty gang.
Holmes, can't you be a little more explicit? After all, I left my wife and my practice without asking any questions. Surely now we're up here and you could let me know what's afoot.
Very well, old fellow. I'm searching for a young gypsy by the name of Pyramus Hearn. He disappeared recently from London, and it's vital that I find him. I know that he can give me some essential information on our old enemy, Professor Moriarty.
And you're expecting to find the gypsy here?
I hope to get news of him, at least. His father, Jasper Hearn, is head of this particular encampment.
Well, why don't you ask if you can see him?
Just what I'm about to do, my dear fellow.
Well, here comes it just now. I'll ask him.
All right. Oh, excuse me.
You speak to me, Gorcho?
Can you tell me where I may find Mr. Jasper Hearn?
What you want with Jasper Hearn?
I have a message for his son, Pyramus.
That is different. Jasper Hearn stands in the booth yonder. He is the Timberland Crow.
Thimble Angro,
yes, he's the gentleman engaged in an interesting exhibition of skill involving three thimbles and a pea. What our American cousins refer to, I understand, as the old shell game. Let's stroll over there, shall we, Otto?
If you would wish to talk to Jasper, it would be better to wait until he is finished. A Thimble Angro needs all his wits about.
By Joe, look at that stunning girl in the tent over there. Who's she?
Her there is penning the rice duckering. That is Lydia. Lydia Pentelangro. Excuse me, I shall tell Jasper to expect you late.
I can't understand a word they say, Holmes. Penning the what?
At last, my dear fellow, you can appreciate how I have felt at times. But at least their words are clear, even if the sense is not, to someone who is unfamiliar with the Romany language.
I don't know why you keep hinting that I'm hard to understand. No one else ever complains of it. In any case, what does penning the thing mean?
Well, if I remember rightly, penning duckerin is telling fortunes. And from the sound of things, Lydia Pentelangro is not greatly pleased with the diamond she penned.
No more. Lydia can tell no more fortune.
Come on, Watson. Let's see what the trouble is.
What do you mean? You must finish it.
But, Olive, my dear, if the young lady doesn't want to tell my fortune...
Rubbish. You crossed her palm with silver. She's taking money under false pretenses.
Here, I give you your silver back. Lydia has never taken money under false pretenses, nor has she told the future when she does not wish to. Goodbye to you.
The insolence of these gypsies is intolerable. If I had my way, they'd be run out of the county.
Now, my dear, don't get so excited. The poor girl's probably...
Good evening. Major Treadgold, isn't it?
Huh? I don't think I have the pleasure of your... Oh, dear me. It's Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, sir.
Well, bless my soul. Haven't seen you since that last meeting of the Geographical Society. Oh, I'd like you to meet my wife.
How do you do, Mrs. Treadgold?
How do you do?
And this is my friend, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
What brings you up to this part of England, Holmes? Are you hot on the trail of some desperate criminal?
Oh, dear me, no. Dr. Watson and I are taking a little holiday, and you and your wife?
We live here in the manor house.
Well, you're very lucky. It's a beautiful part of the country, Mrs. Treadgold.
I hate it. I was born and brought up in London. I'm never really happy outside the city.
Yes, Oliver's not one for the peace of the countryside, I'm afraid. Well, well, perhaps we'll get back there. It's a little difficult these days, you know. We've got the boy to consider.
Boy? Your son, sir?
My dead brother's son, Doctor.
We have no children.
My little nephew's only 4 years old, you see, and I'm his guardian as well as being executor of his estates up here. So you can understand it would be difficult for us to get back to London.
It's only difficult because you put the child's happiness before mine, Arthur.
Oh, now, Olive, you know I have to watch his interests up here. After all, when he comes of age, he'll be one of the richest young men in Norfolk.
Yes, and with money that should have come to us. In any case, Arthur, if we do have to live up here, I'd find it more tolerable if you'd keep this gypsy scum off the estate.
You seem to have taken a violent dislike to the gypsies, Mrs. Treadgold. May I ask why?
Oh, they persecute us. They steal our sheep, they break our windows. And just the other day, they wantonly led our prize pig into the Bragstone quagmire and let the beast perish.
Why should they single you out for persecution like this, do you suppose?
Oh, I can't imagine. I've always tried to be nice to them.
Too nice, Arthur. That's your trouble.
Well, I have a very good reason for humoring them, my dear. You see, Holmes, I've always been afraid they may carry this feud so far that they'll even hurt the baby. Olive, my dear, I wonder if you'd go ahead and wait for me in the carriage. It's getting rather chilly. I'll join you in a moment.
Very well, Arthur, but don't keep me waiting long. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good night, Mr.
Let's stroll away from the camp, shall we? I've got something very important to tell you. Something I didn't like to say in front of Olive. The gypsies have threatened to kidnap our boy.
Great Scott, how shocking.
What form did their threat take, sir?
This letter. I found it pinned on the frame of my dressing room mirror when I went up after dinner tonight.
Let me see it, will you, please?
Well, what does it say, Holmes?
A Romany rye... A Romany rye won't procure insults forever, Major and Mrs. High and Mighty. Watch out for the Treadgold heir. The Bragstone quagmire would make a nice finishing school for him.
Romany rye? What's that mean?
Well, it's their own term, meaning gypsy. Mr. Holmes, what shall I do?
Major Treadgold, I should say...
Great heavens! That shot just missed me.
Where the blazes have come from? I can't see a soul.
They have come from behind any one of those caravans ahead of us.
If you want to direct evidence, gentlemen, this is it. That is the first open attempt on my life. Holmes, what extraordinary luck for me that you're in the neighborhood. I'll pay you any fee you name to handle this business.
It seems to me that this is a job for the police.
I don't want to go to them.
Oh, why not, sir?
Well, I'm afraid that these attacks may stem from some injustice to the gypsies committed by my late brother. If that were so, I wouldn't wish to expose the fact. I want this kept private. What do you say, Mr. Holmes?
Very well, sir. I'll accept the case. It shall be kept private, and I promise to do everything in my power to protect the safety of the Treadgold heir. We are staying at the Rose and Crown in the village. Please get in touch with me if there should be any further developments.
The affair seems to be closed down for the night now, Holmes. They're turning out the Napa flares.
Yes, let's stroll over to Jasper Hearn's caravan, shall we? He should be free now.
Well, if he's head of this tribe, he ought to be able to tell you something about this Treadgold business.
Yes. Though I shall first ask him about his son, Pyramus, the man I'm looking for. The fact that I know his son will inspire confidence. Here we are. This is the caravan.
That girl, Lydia Petrolengo, sitting outside, the one that was telling fortune.
Yes. Good evening.
Who are you, and what do you want?
I wish to speak to Jasper Hearn.
He is not here. He has gone to the marshes.
When will he be back?
I do not know. You bring trouble to Jasper?
No, my dear. This is a personal visit.
We're not after him for being a Thimble Engro, or for Penning Duckerin.
Oh, for a Gorgio, you speak a Romany well, brother. Oh, you are a true Lavengro, master of words. Where did you learn it?
From Jasper's son, Pyramus.
Ah, oh, you know Pyramus, then.
A fine boy.
Oh, sit down on the grass, my friend. You may wait here for Jasper. He will be back soon.
Thank you.
Is that your violin lying on the steps, young lady?
No, that is Jasper's Bolshom.
Jasper's Bolshom, what is that?
That is the Romany word for violin. You play, sir?
No, but my friend does.
So? Well, then take it, brother. The stars are bright. The night is warm. Music will be sweet.
For a Romany chai, I'm afraid my violin playing will sound rather poor stuff.
Play on, brother. Oh, brother, you play well, but Sarasati Zigeunerweisen is not the true gypsy music. I've heard it in London and in Budapest. They call it gypsy. But what can a Gorgio know of the true heart of Romany? Wait here. I will get my own violin.
Charming girl, charming. But why does she keep on talking about Gorgios? Is that more of their confounded gibberish?
A Gorgio, old chap, is a term they use for anyone who is not a true gypsy.
Now I will play for you the real gypsy airs.
Thank you. I should appreciate it very much. But before you begin, I wonder if I might ask you a question.
A friend of Pyramus may ask me any question. What is it?
I observed you telling fortunes earlier on tonight. You refused to tell a certain gentleman's hand and gave him money back. Did you know who the gentleman was?
No, brother. Nor the noisy woman with him. I refused to pen the doctrine because I saw blood and violent death in his hand. Violent death, it is soon to come.
Violent death?
Now, Watson, fellow, I want you to do me a favor.
Yes, of course I will. What is it?
I must remain here until Jasper Hearn comes back. I should like you to return to the inn. It's more than possible that we may have news from our client before the night is out. I'll be back later.
Well, it's nice of you to give me the best job. Good night, Mr. Petrino.
Good night.
And now, please play for me. True Romany air.
Very well, my friend. Listen. Now you must play, brother. I shall make a true Bishamanger of you. Come, see if you can follow me.
Mm-hmm.
Lydia, you have taught him well. You have made a true bushman of him.
He is an apt pupil, Jasper.
Well, with such a teacher, it's hard to be otherwise, Mr. Hearn. That is, if one has a spark of music in one's soul.
Call me Jasper, brother. You have spoken well, my son. You have talked wisely to me of things that I have not understood. Come, we shall drink wine together underneath the stars. I shall get glasses and a flagon.
Jasper has taken a great fancy, Van Brother.
And I to him. He's a fine man.
Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, Lydia?
May I read your hand, brother?
Why, yes, of course.
A strange hand, and a beautiful one. A long lifeline, and yet I see sudden death and violence surrounding you. Now, at this moment. And in the future, I see a cherub for you, across the seas, within a year. Beware of water that runs in the mountains. Near death will befall you there. More travels, more dangers. Oh, you must be careful, brother. Oh.
What is it?
Our paths are destined to cross but once. We shall not meet after this night. That makes me sad.
Oh, but we shall meet again. I shall be here for some days yet.
No, it says in your hand that we shall not meet again. And a hand cannot lie. Who is this that comes towards us through the moonlight?
My friend, Dr. Watson, I think. Yes. Hello, Watson. What's wrong?
Wrong. Everything's wrong. Mrs. Treadgill's waiting in the carriage. She wants you to come at once.
Indeed, why?
The child has been kidnapped. Major Treadgill has gone for the police, and Mrs. Treadgill is threatening to rouse the local inhabitants and come out here and burn this camp to the ground if you don't find the child.
You tell Mrs. Treadgill to return home. She can do no good here.
But Holmes...
Tell her, old chap, that I have the case well in hand.
But how can you have? You've been out here all the time playing your violin.
Have faith in me, please, old fellow, will you? And deliver the message. Then come back here and join me, and I'll explain everything to you.
Very well. I suppose you know what you're up to.
Violence and trouble, brother. It is all there in your hand.
Well, what must be shall be, and I wouldn't have it otherwise. But for the moment, the sky is starlit, the air is still, and the melody you played haunts me. Let's play it together again, shall we?
I should like that. I should like that very much.
Dr. Watson, I must say this is a strange story you're telling us. You mean to say that the heir to the Treadgold Estates had been kidnapped and yet Sherlock Holmes paid no attention?
Yes, that's what it seemed like, Mr. Bartell. I couldn't understand him. I've never known him to be so indifferent to a case. There he sat until the early hours of the morning as he and that girl scraped away at their violins and never said a word about the kidnapped baby. Finally, as we walked home across the field a few hours before dawn, his mind seemed to return to the matter at hand. He spoke quietly, and yet there was a note of suppressed excitement in his voice.
What, my dear fellow? You're angry with me, aren't you?
No, Holmes, I must say, but I'm confused. That girl seems to have bewitched Sepp. Have you forgotten that you accepted the job of guarding the Treadgold heir, and that the child was kidnapped tonight?
No, I'm fully aware of the fact.
Holmes, heaven's sake, stop being so infernally matter-of-fact. What's come over with you?
Oh, possibly it's the mood of this mild autumn night. It is indeed a St. Martin's summer. So much so that I've left my coat and deerstalker cap behind me at the encampment. Let's go back, shall we? And incidentally, when we get there, I can set your mind at rest by showing you the kidnapped child.
You mean you know where it is?
Certainly. It's, in the camp.
Then the gypsies did steal it.
No, my dear fellow. I did.
What? This is one of those occasions when you absolutely infuriate me, Holmes. If you must keep me up half the night while you have a fitting conflict with a gypsy girl, at least of all you can do is tell me what's going on. You stole the child yourself. In heaven's name, why?
Because the threatening note to Major Treadgold was so obviously a fraud.
Well, why do you say that?
You will remember that the letter began, "A Romany Rye will not take your insults forever." Now, a Romany Rye, despite what Major Treadgold said, does not mean a gypsy, but a man who knows about gypsy law. It is a term no true gypsy would apply to himself. He would use the expression Romany child. So it was obvious from the beginning that no gypsy threatened the child. Now, who else had a motive for harming it?
Well, Major Treadgold, because he stood to inherit the estate.
Yes, or his wife. It's quite obvious she has no liking for our present life, and the child is an obstacle to a new one. With the child kidnapped and later made away with, obviously they both stood to gain a great many of the things they wanted.
Yes, you're right. And whoever the culprit is took the precaution of pinning the blame in advance on the unfortunate gypsies by writing the false kidnapping note. Wait a minute, but how about the shot that was fired at us tonight as we went with Major Treadgold?
Probably fired by an accomplice to the plot, in order to give authenticity to the supposed danger.
And the child is now in the gypsy encampment.
Yes, I promised that I would protect the Treadgold heir, and so I arranged with Jasper Hearn to have the boy kidnapped for his own safety.
But if anyone should find the child, they'll say the gypsies deliberately stole him.
Oh, I'm quite certain that before that occasion arises, old chap, the criminal will have shown his or her hand. Come on, old fellow. Put your best foot forward. It's a long way back to the camp yet, and it's nearly dawn.
Have come back, brother. You wish to spend the remainder of the night in the encampment?
No, thank you, Jasper. I just came back with my cap and coat. It was so warm tonight, and I forgot about them, and I started to walk home without them.
I will find them for you. Oh, we found this message for you soon after you had left. It was pinned to the door of the caravan. I do not know how it got there. I will search for your coat and cap.
Another message? What does it say, Holmes?
Never trust a Romany Rye. Uh-huh. The same mistake again, Watson. Your plans have been betrayed. For proof, meet me at the Bragstone Quagmire at dawn.
It's a trap, Holmes.
Obviously. We must spring it with caution.
I cannot find your coat or your cap, brother. It has vanished.
Vanished? May I speak to Lydia?
That is a strange thing, too. Lydia has gone also.
She's gone. Tell me, Jasper, did she read this note?
Yes, she did. She could not help reading it.
Then she, too, realized it was a trap. She went out in my coat and deerstalking hat to keep the appointment for me.
Holmes, we must go after
her. Jasper, call out the Romany Childs. There's a devil waiting to be caught in the Bragstone Quagmire.
How much further to the quagmire, Jasper?
200 yards. No more.
There's Lydia. There she is. And she's dressed in my deerstalking hat and coat, walking into the trap that was set for me. Lydia! Lydia!
They got her. Look, look. She's stumbled. She's fallen.
I'll go to her, Watson. Jasper, get that devil who staged this fiendish plot. I've a score to settle with him.
Do not worry, brother. The score will be settled. Follow me, Doctor.
Thank you. I'm right behind you.
Lydia! Lydia!
Jack Combs, I was wrong. We do meet again. Your hand lied to me.
Oh, Lydia. You're wounded. What can I do for you?
There is nothing you can do, brother. No one can help me now. There is little time. Please, hold my hand.
There. Tell me, Lydia, did you see who fired the shot?
Yes. It was the man whose fortune I told today. The man with the noisy wife.
Major Treadgold!
Jasper and the men will take care of him. There is one thing I wish to tell you, brother.
Yes?
Our short meeting has brought me happiness. I should like to think I can leave you something so that you will not forget me.
I shall always remember you, Lydia. Always. You gave your life for mine.
There is one thing of mine that I wish you to have. It will remind you of me.
What is it?
My violin. It brought us together. I should you to have it, brother.
Lydia.
Do not be sad. It is good. My life for yours. You will give help to many people. It is in your hand. Goodbye. Oshimangro.
Holmes, it was dreadful. Dreadful. The gypsies surrounded Major Treadgold. They forced him back into the Bragstone Quagmire. I tried to pull him out, but I couldn't do it single hand.
I'm not sorry, Watson. Jasper, you know that Lydia is dead?
Yes, I know it. The gypsies knew it, too. This is why you were a single-handed doctor in your attempts to save the murderer. No Romany child would raise a finger to help him.
Yes, I can understand that, but great Scott, man, if you'd seen his face as the quaking mud sucked him under.
Lydia's death was less dramatic, but equally moving, I assure you.
Sherlock Holmes, I met you less than 5 hours ago. You have saved my tribe from a devilish plot that would have blackened their names. A plot that would have driven them from the countryside.
What can Blythe do in return?
Two things. First, tell me where I may reach your son, Pyramus.
His address is in this sealed envelope, Rutter.
Thank you.
What else may I do for you?
As Lydia died, she willed one gift for remembrance.
And what was that gift, Rutter?
A violin.
Of course. Here it is.
Huh. You told me I might become a true Boschamengro. Let's see if I can recapture the melody once more.
That was a very strange story. A very fascinating one. But tell me, do you really believe that gypsies can tell your fortune by reading the palm of your hand?
Well, frankly, I don't know, Mr. Bartell. Perhaps they can. Perhaps it's coincidence. And then again, maybe some gypsy women have a heightened sense of intuition. You know, a woman's intuition can be an extraordinary thing.
Yeah, so my wife keeps telling me. Of course, I have a kind of intuition myself. Every time I see a bottle of wine with the name Petri on the label, my intuition tells me I'm going to like it. And I always do, too.
Mr. Bartell, if ever I saw a man with a one-track mind, you're that man.
Thank you, Doctor. As long as my one track is Petri, I can't miss. Because nobody can miss with Petri wine. What other wine has such tradition, such a story behind it? Petri wine is made by a family. The Petri family. They've owned and operated their own business ever since its inception, back in the 1800s. The Petri family has been making good wine for generations, and they've been handing on down in the family, from father to son, the fine art of turning luscious, sun-ripened grapes into fragrant, delicious wine. And that sure adds up to a lot of experience. You can just bet your last dollar that no matter what kind of wine you want, when you ask for a Petri wine, you're asking for good wine, because Petri took time to bring you good wine. Well, Dr. Watson, what story are you planning to tell us next week?
Next week, Mr. Bartell, I'm going to tell you of a strange adventure that Sherlock Holmes and I had in the East End of London. It concerns five nephews, an eccentric will, and a dead man's watch that gave us the clue to murder.
Tonight, Sherlock Green's adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Adventure of the Red Circle. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appeared through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures. They are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series.
Well, listeners, what did you think? This new technique I employed was through fiddling around with repair tools in RX-8, a specialized tool made possible by Patreon supporters that allow me to manually, one by one, strip out, reduce, and heal damaged audio. I was basically bouncing in my seat for the past 3 hours because I finally found a way to repair this episode. So yeah, I'm excited to jump onto the rest. This process does take longer, but has major dividends, and I can't wait to apply what I learned to the rest of my audio with those major sound issues that were posing huge obstacles before, now completely passable. Now listeners, if you enjoy this episode, leave an iTunes review, or any review for that matter, as it helps others find the show, but only if you've got some spare time. And if you really enjoy what I do, have a look at my Patreon page, and if you think you're able, support the show at any tier you like. The Patreon page is www.patreon.com/SFGT. As simple as that. And speaking of my Patreon, are my supporters, my amazing Patreon supporters, I'll start with my Ode Night Tea Titan, majestic and ever marvelous, Queen of the Cats, Maya. Thank you so much for your support, Maya. Seriously, today's episode would not have been repaired or healed like it has been without your support and the support of all my Patreons. Thanks to you, I've been able to upgrade my old RX-7 software to RX-8 standard, which gives me access to many, many more tools. Repairing and actually healing damaged audio is now fully possible. Thank you immensely, Maya. You've unlocked a door that was simply not accessible before. You are a legend. Thanks again. My white tea warlord, Lizasaurus Rex, mate, thanks to you, Dudio, I've used your support for additional plugins for Photoshop, new templates, new designs, and also donating to the places where I obtain my audio and my images. You're helping this podcast help others, and for that, many, many people are grateful. Hope you're doing fantastic, Lizza. Hugs and high fives your way, mate. Thank you so much. My second white tea warlord, Pages the Mages, thank you for your lovely email. I've read it, responded, and had a blast doing so. Thank you for your comms, Paige. I've used your support, Paige, to reach out to some authors, and I'm also in the process of figuring out a way to perhaps run a giveaway or a means of giving back to a writing community. Still in the works, but wanted to help authors who are starting or thinking of starting to take that leap. We'll see how we go, but thanks to you, this is all in the works. Cheers, you awesome gal, you. And my brilliant and ever-awesome Melgrain forces I am lucky to have. Chad Warren, Just Heather, Juicebox Andy, Peter Effeli, Dolphin in Cow, Michelangelo, Yacone, Tea Time Drinker 1, and Divided by Zero. Thank you so much, mates. This Wednesday is going to be something different, something wacky, that I hope you'll enjoy. No clues, you're just going to have to find out, mates, by checking on in on Wednesday. As always, folks, till next, we meet.